Hey, y'all. You're listening to Winning at Life, Live Financial News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. We've been doing this for you, 11 and a half years about now. Our objective here is to help you make better decisions with your money and ultimately reach that financial destination that you wish to arrive at. One thing people think is maybe it's too late to get started. They don't have enough time, don't have enough money. So some of the things we talk about is helping you reach those decisions better. And one of the things I always like to say is you do have time to impact what you have saved. And it may not, yes, it may not be enough. And you might not have anything there. So a couple thoughts on that. Once again, the phone number is 504-260-0995. Couple thoughts on that. First off, the core thing is creating some emergency savings. And once again, that might not be enough, but a few grand is much better than nothing when that surprise happens or damage to the car, damage to the house, AC breaks, need a new set of tires, or a health emergency. A few grand makes a big, big difference versus nothing or having to throw it on a credit card. And a credit card is not emergency fund. Your home equity is not an emergency. So that's where you start by at least getting a few grand set aside, then start building on top of that. And depending on your situation, your horizon, when you're going to need the money will help determine how you save above the emergency amount as well and invest that money. And we're going to talk more about that this morning.
Let's go ahead and jump in the phones. Jason and LaRonja, you're first up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Jason?
Well, I appreciate you taking my call. And I'm set to inherit some stocks, some shares of Dominion Energy. It's about right around 900 shares. And I don't know how to go about the tax thing or if I got to pay capital gains tax on the entire amount or if I leave it in an account or swap it over to my own broker and just collect the dividends. I just don't understand what would be the best way to go about the tax issue on it.
Well, let's talk about how you're inheriting. How did you become aware that you're going to receive ownership of these stocks?
Well, we're doing a succession of an estate, and that would be my share of the estate.
Okay. So from what you understand, there's other beneficiaries of this estate. So there's people other than you that's getting some of this stock, correct?
Yes, sir. One other person.
Okay. So this money's already in a brokerage. Is it stock that's in a brokerage account or is it stock that's inside of an IRA?
No, I believe it's just a brokerage account.
Okay.
I'm not real sure. I know the attorney, we've already done all the paperwork to do the split. The way I understand it is they're just going to split it in that brokerage and basically make me and the other beneficiary an account with them. And then I can choose to transfer them to my own brokerage if I'd like.
Okay. Here's some thoughts on that. And that's actually how it should be done is you and the other Benny that's inheriting the and we're referring to it as non-qualified money because it's not an IRA, Roth, 401k, any of that. So you're setting up an account, and typically what happens is they'll split those shares up, and let's just say hypothetically there's 1,800 shares. You're getting 900, and the other person's getting 900. So those shares should be moved to your account. And from a tax consequences standpoint, when did this person pass away? What month? Was it this year?
It was in August.
Okay.
August 17th.
Okay. So that simplifies it also because actually what you're inheriting is going to be what's called a step-up basis, meaning it doesn't matter what he paid. That person could have paid $2 for the stock, and it could be worth $100 a share now. But when you inherit it, you're inheriting the value of that stock on their date of death with a step-up basis. And that's one thing you need to go back and look at. What was the value of that stock on the date of death? because that is going to become your cost basis. So, for example, if you inherited it, when you inherit that, the date of death was worth $100 a share, and you, a few months from now, decide to sell it, and let's say it's at $120 a share. Your tax liability or capital gains going to be based on that $20 increase in value, not the $2 that he paid for it. So you don't have any tax liability of inheriting it. Taxes will come due when you sell it, but that'll be dependent upon the new step-up basis, and it's really important that you understand that and keep track of that. And let the brokerage firm know that value. It should be set up in their system, the correct cost basis of that stock. Was there any other property like real estate or anything?
No, sir.
Okay.
No. Everything else was really straightforward and simple. The only thing was a vehicle. And I mean, this come from her other inheritance from my grandmother, and she just left it in there for the dividends. And like I said, if I was going to do the same thing, just with a different brokerage, not necessarily sell them, but because I have stock with another account, so I would prefer to transfer it into that other company just to keep everything in one company.
You could do that.
Just transfer it.
There's another consideration of separate property. I'm not going to get into your married or not and how that goes, but there's this also consideration of separate property from an inheritance standpoint. But yeah, if it's stock and you're holding some other stock in another non-qualified account, yeah, you can move that together. Just make sure you, once again, keep up with your cost basis, and that'll simplify life going forward. Thanks for the call, Jason.
That would be all right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well done. That's the successful first call. Way to kick off the show there. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. You can also give us a call or text from the front screen of the Winning It Life app. Do you like the idea of him maybe combining that with his current portfolio? You said he wants to have everything in just one company, so it's easier to keep up with.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, actually. Why have multiple accounts? Have some stock in one account here, stock in another account there. No. Get it all together. It's non-qualified stock. It doesn't matter how he obtained that because that's dealt with on proper cost basis being shown in the account where it's at. Even if that's not right, it's ultimately his responsibility to keep up with it, because when he does sell it, that's got to be noted on the tax return. There's a form for that with the IRS. And they're going to want to know what the cost basis was, what the selling price was, and go through, you know, then it'll go through, is that a short or long-term capital gain? And the capital gain tax will be subject to his income overall. Next week, and then go back 13 years. Well, let's call it a 13 years from Monday, this coming Monday. The single best trading day for the S&P 500 in the last 71 years, you're doing the math, that's since 1950 took place 13 years ago this coming week, a gain of 11.58% total return in one trading day. How about that? Wealthiest families, here's another stat for you. The top 5% of U.S. households own 71% of U.S. equities, while the top 20% of U.S. households own 93% of U.S. equities. That's Federal Reserve helped us out with that information. This number is probably going to be pretty important to you. Inflation. You heard of that? You felt it? Yeah, I think everybody has. Only people that are not aware of it are also the same ones that don't listen to the show. They're off the grid somewhere. Consumer Price Index will be reported this coming Wednesday. For the trailing 12 months ending 8/31, inflation was up 5.3%, a level not seen over the course of a calendar year in 31 years. So where we are from a CPI, it's been 31 years since this amount of inflation has hit us. couple thoughts there on that. More to come.
You have any thoughts on the jobs report that came out this week?
It depends on how you break it down. You know, some say it was a disappointment. It was a miss, but I don't think it was that big a miss of what some were saying there. But it's just kind of interesting. The bigger impact is the people, the reasons people are leaving the workforce and those not coming back into it is something to look at, is the shifting demographics of society here in the United States. And that's because people have done well, the market's done well, real estate's done well, and it's allowing some people to go ahead and opt out because they don't need to go to work. They've got enough money, or their real estate's worth enough that they don't have to go back to work. That is impacting our jobs numbers. So that's my thoughts on this reading.
That number, that headline number looks really good though, 4.8% unemployment. But yeah, you got to dig around to find some ugly stuff. A lot of that is because over 300,000 people left the labor force and decided, I couldn't find a job, I'm going to stop looking, I'm just going to be unemployed from here on out.
Yeah. What my thoughts that I gave you is not representative of all of them, but I'm pretty sure it's impacting a portion of that.
4.8%. I don't know. See, you have the balance here to where, is it so bad that they need to be passing $1 trillion stimulus packages when unemployment's at 4.8%?
Well, we weren't passing giant stimulus packages while Obama was president because unemployment was high.
Yeah, they did that one at the very beginning because we had the financial crisis.
You know, what was unemployment number when Trump became president?
It was like 5%, 4.9%.
Okay. Did we pass $1 trillion stimulus?
Nope, sure didn't.
You know, we need to let the marketplace. This, once again, United States is not China. China, you know, wants to control and have a piece of everything and dictate and as of GDP, they have a lot more debt than the U.S. We don't need to go in that direction, and they need to let this play out and quit spending money like they stole it. I think that's one thing it comes down to, is just relax and start working on things that need, that is going to require some action. And I just think they've like, because of COVID and what happened to keep things going, and yeah, a lot of money was spent, probably more than what was needed. But on the other side, you could say, yeah, we probably locked down more and longer than was needed as well in hindsight. But it's always good, you know, easy to go back and look at, well, we could have done this, we should have done this. But okay, we spent the money, but that is not a green light to keep spending money like you stole it. I stole it, I got to spend it before they take it from me. We've seen that. We've covered stories in the news where money shows up in somebody's account, and next thing you know, they bought a couple cars, went on a trip.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah. You got to pay the piper at some point. We as a country are going to have to pay for all this easy money. And if we keep adding more onto it, it's just going to be a bigger thing we have to pay for down the road.
Yeah. And I think with the new spending packages that are coming through, something's going to pass and you can forget about inflation being transitory. It might not go up as fast as it did this year, but those prices are not going to come back down. Maybe for a couple things like a used car or a 2x4, but in general, forget transitory. That was a hope.
Yeah, that was an early look at what's going on, and we're still seeing supply chain problems, and that's an impact on inflation where there's shortages. But these supply chain problems are not going away quickly. You know, they're talking about how many containers yet to be unloaded at U.S. ports. And the reason is, it's just all of a sudden now things started being shipped and moved, but there's not, and it's not that there's workers at the ports. They're there. It's just all this stuff's coming in and there's no way to unload it faster than they absolutely can. So even that part is backed up, and it's going to take a while for this to sort out. We might not see normalcy in supply chains to, I think, earliest would be in 2023 to kind of feel like, okay, things are back to normal, catching up. It's just going to take a while because the demand's not there. The demand is put off. So the demand's still there, and we're falling in more. We're going to have to wait months for things. But some of the news is talking about inflation there. And I'd mentioned a few minutes ago, inflation as of September 30th of this year using the Consumer Price Index. And once again, it's going to be reported on 10/13 for the trailing 12 months ending August 31st. Inflation was up 5.3%. So we're looking probably for a few more ticks up in that. One of the areas that's going to, that impacts so many things, if not virtually everything, and that's oil prices. Oil prices have gone up 64% year to date. West Texas Intermediate crude has gone from $48.52 a barrel on December 31st to $79.35. There's probably two classes of people that might not have noticed. The ones off the grid are clueless of that. You know, they live in the woods up in Oregon or somewhere, or North Mississippi or North Louisiana. There's a lot of forests there too. Okay, and these electric car owners that have, only electric cars and not pulled up to a gas pump is not aware. But, you know, there's so many things that are made. You know, your roofing material comes from, is a byproduct of oil, plastics, rubber. It can go on and on and on.
Fertilizer.
And the things you're needing has to be transported. And I don't see any electric 18-wheelers rolling around as well. So, you know, I think it's part of what's impacting inflation, everything there. So as I mentioned, coming back from the break, okay, if you want to join the conversation, it's 504-260-0995. If you're a newbie just joining the show, we've been doing this for over 11 years, bringing you live financial news talk radio. The biggest part, join the conversation. If you've got a question, you're wanting to figure out how to start making better decisions, how to get better at saving and investing, give us a call, 504-260-0995. And for the newbies, my background, I've been in financial services for over 30 years, plus several more years on that, not getting precise, but I've been doing this a long time. My day job is CEO, founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. We're money managers and financial advisors at that firm. When I went to break, I said I was going to give you some warnings that Wharton's Jeremy Siegel has mentioned. That's on a CNBC article. He had spoke to Trading Nation last Friday. So some of his things, he said warns that there's serious risk tied to rising prices. He said there's going to be pressure on the Fed to accelerate its taper process. He said, I do not believe that the market is prepared for an accelerated taper. I've said a few weeks ago, one of the things I'm concerned about is, as usual, the Fed's going to be behind on that, as well as increasing interest rates. His cautious shift is clear. I'm going to give you some excerpts from this article. His cautious shift is clear departure from his bullishness back in January. To be precise, on the 4th, he correctly predicted the Dow would hit 35,000 this year, a 14% jump from the year's first market open. According to Siegel, the biggest threat facing Wall Street is Federal Reserve Chair Powell stepping away from easy money policies much sooner than expected due to surging inflation. And I see where Siegel thinks he may well, but what I think is he's probably going to continue to delay some and then have to play catch up. We all know that there's a lot of levity in the equity market. It's related to the liquidity that the Fed has provided. If that's going to be taken away faster, it also means that interest rate hikes are going to occur sooner, he noted. Both those things are not positives for the equity market. And I've been giving you warnings about that. The market may do fine with the tapering, but when interest rates start moving up, yeah, it's going to be a problem. He's particularly concerned about the impact both on growth stocks, particularly technology. He suggests the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which is about 5% away from its record high, is set up for sharp losses. He sees the backdrop boding well for companies benefiting from rising interest rates, like value stocks that have higher pricing power and deliver dividends. That can be, say, underperformers such as utilities and consumer staples known for their dividends could have a strong run in this area. They may have their day in the sun, finally, Siegel said. He's still bullish on gold. He believes it has become relatively cheap as an inflation head and cites Bitcoin's popularity for that reason. Yeah, it seems like Bitcoin's become the favorite there. He remembers inflation in the 70s. Everyone turned to gold. They turned to collectibles, turned to precious metals, he said. And today in our digital world, they're turning to Bitcoin and ignoring gold. So, and he's not put off by real estate prices, he said, and I agree with him here, and we've talked about that on the show. I don't think it's a bubble, Siegel said. So that's kind of, I look, if he's saying that's confirmation for how I'm seeing it as well. Investors have seen some of this inflation. Mortgage rates are going to have to rise an awful lot more to make a dent in real estate. And I don't know that we see that level of interest rate increases. I still think it's almost a myth that we get back to 3% on 10-year treasuries.
Kenneth in Ocean Springs, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Kenneth?
Well, I had a question about Social Security. My wife keeps telling me, you know, and I don't think this is so, but she keeps telling me, you know, there's that income limitation. You know, when you get Social Security, it's like $18,000-something as a single and $36,000 married or whatever. She tells me that goes away if you go all the way to full retirement age. And this is my question.
Okay. That was your question? Or
so does it go away? Does it go away? I mean, do you have no income limitation if you get to full retirement age?
Correct. There is no
whatever.
There is no income test once you reach FRA, full retirement age, that year in which you turn FRA. So if you turn it on and you've turned it on early, yeah, there's an income test. It's $18,960 for you, and it stays with you. So for each $2 you make over that, they're going to take back a dollar. That stays with you to FRA. If you wait to start at FRA, you're not going to have that income test any further. Does that help you?
Great. Yes, it does.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
Thank you.
So he was asking, it looks like his wife was right about there's income test, but it does go away when you reach FRA. Now, he gave us a joint number, and I wanted to clarify that because I did not address it because we're going to a break. And here's where it is. There's not a joint income number. If you haven't reached your full retirement age but want to file early, you need to know where the earnings limit is. They adjust it up each year. This year it's $18,970. If you're married, can your spouse's earnings affect your Social Security benefit? Most couples are used to having all their household income counted together in one big pot. For example, if you file your taxes as married filing jointly, earnings from both spouses are counted together to determine how much you pay in taxes. So it makes sense to wonder if a spouse earns more than Social Security income limit, how might that affect your benefits if you file early? The answer is two parts. It's yes and yeah. It's no also. Why? Well, it depends. But thankfully, the answer isn't that complicated to figure out. So before we dive into the spousal impact or other spouses' benefits, here's what's going on. The earnings limit is also known as the income limit. The earnings limit or earnings test, the official term, and I kind of refer to it that way. But two quick things before we jump into that test. Be aware that we're talking about Social Security income limits for retirement benefits, not disability or SSI. The earnings limit on Social Security is not the same as income taxes on Social Security. So do not get those confused. So when we talk about income limit, be aware that it only affects you if you're under full retirement age. Once you reach FRA, the limit does not apply. It depends on your year of birth. So typically you're going to be either 66, 67, somewhere in between. The actual amount of earning limit changes annually. It doesn't matter if these are your benefits or spousal benefits, all subject to an earnings test. The only exception is the calendar year you reach full retirement age. At this point, your income limit is increased. More excess earnings are allowed. So does joint income count against you? The simple but complete or incomplete answer is no, it does not count. The earnings test is an individual test. If you, a husband and wife who receive Social Security benefits from work they perform, the spouse's excess earnings cannot affect them. As long as the benefits you receive from your work history, they are insulated. For example, if your wife goes back to work, it may affect her benefit payment, but it will not affect yours. But there's one little tricky part. Excess earnings, those earnings that are over the limit, will affect your benefits and any benefits paid from your benefits. So if anyone is collecting benefits from your work and you have excess earnings, their benefit will be affected as well. So there's a little more information there on that.
Chuck in Mandeville. Hey, Chuck, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, sir?
Hi. I'd like to know if, do you know of any country in the world which lives within their means, is not drowning in debt?
I don't know of a country that lives within their means. James, how about you?
Well, I saw that he was going to be asking this on the break, so I looked a few things up. And
That'll help.
There's a few countries that live within their means and balance their budget. And Germany's supposed to every year, but they didn't manage to last year. They have some sort of constitutional amendment or law or whatever that says they have to get within like a few percent. But if you go pull it up, there's a handful of countries that ran a little bit of a surplus last year. And you'll notice the ones that are running the biggest debts are the first world economies that can kind of afford it.
Okay. Well, give us two countries that's living within their means.
Well, okay, so for the last year was really tough. 2020 screwed up a lot of numbers, but we're talking about countries like Iceland, Luxembourg, you know, these little guys that, yeah. Okay,
as I thought there. And that's one thing that's irritating me about what's going on in Washington. Well, there's a bunch of things, but that's not unusual. It's always something, no matter who's up there. With that said, you know, where they say this isn't going to cost us anything. This is costing us a lot because they're raising taxes to fund it. And we have so much stuff that needs to be fixed without creating all this other stuff. And I think free markets should dictate some of that. But if we're going to increase taxes, we need to at least get to the point where we're paying the bills. It isn't like we're living within our means. We don't live within our means. And, you know, like Social Security's got to be fixed, but that's going to be a payroll tax that's increased because that's the payroll taxes essentially is what takes care of that. So any other thoughts, Chuck?
No, I thank you for the answer. Probably the countries who live sort of within their means are ones who don't have to maintain a massive military. So that's one interesting point, but
it's tough to do. And look, here's the reality. Most people out there, I say the average family, has a mortgage and a loan on a car. So and technically, are you living within your means? No, you've spent more than you could afford, so you're carrying debt. Pay that. But we have to handle that debt. Even if we keep a mortgage for 30 years and refinance it again and you pay off a car, it breaks, you go buy another car. So we kind of are managing our debt, but we also have kind of a limit to what we go out there and borrow, because those folks loaning us money to do things are going to look at what our capabilities are, especially on buying a house. They don't play around on that. They have a formulas, and they're going to hold to that, just not money. And I think, you know, where we have this debt ceiling and all, but what they're trying to do, we're going to end up at $100 trillion in debt. That is coming, but it's supposed to be a great ways down the road, and it still should be stay in a reasonable realm as a percentage of GDP. It's just like we're on a dadgum race to get to it as fast as we can, right. And that's the concern I have of it. Thanks for the call, Chuck.
Well, and
let's jump on that next caller.
David in Ponchatoula, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, David?
Oh, I just have a simple question. I was thinking about rolling over. By the way, I'm a client of yours and been very satisfied. Let me get that out of the way. I think y'all do really good work, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
My question is, I have a IRA at the bank at one of them, and I'm thinking about just rolling it over into a gold silver account. That's just simply my question. Would you push me to do that or not to?
Well, that's a tough question, because first off, when we're having a recommendation like that, some of that could already be built into strategies that we're using out there. But just to go buy gold or just buy silver without a consideration of everything else, I cannot recommend you to do that. And that's one reason you have us on your team, is to talk about that. And ultimately, we don't know where that goes, and we don't know how that might impact your risk. I personally don't hold any gold, any silver on the outside or some account or in my closet. You know, I'm not doing that, and I'm not interested in doing that. But what I'm interested is managing assets in a way that they keep growing, and also have a defensive strategy built in, where I talked about Siegel's warnings, and I've been given these warnings, and this is to you as well as all other clients and people that aren't clients. You probably should be, but one of the reasons is we have to prepare for what's coming there. Interest rates are going to go up. Inflation is going to stay. It's going to impact our portfolios if we've not planned for it. We know there's going to be a pullback, but I don't want all of that pullback to impact my money or your money, and that's why we're having these pop-up meetings and getting clients in for reviews to get the tactical into the mix, which might be better than having gold or silver as a hedge. When you was a kid, did you do a lemonade stand?
Oh, my goodness, no.
Okay. You lived out in the country. There wasn't anybody passing by wanting lemonade,
no,
was there?
Four cars would pass by my house.
I did that as well, but I found that doing lawns as a kid was a lot more profitable.
You did the
lemonade stand? Yeah.
Oh, cool.
For a few days, and it didn't make enough.
Oh, for
I
a few
could
days.
Make more, yeah. You know, with a couple hours of cutting grass there. And my first piece of equipment was free because I repaired it, because the thought was, yeah, you can have it if you can get it to work. Well, I got it to working. So I just I thought that's a little neat story. But then the compounding of money, and I kind of always had a business perspective, you know, and then I also got into flipping cars at age 14. I didn't have a driver's license to drive, but I bought two cars, and because I don't know why I bought two, but I got deals on them, and then ended up selling both of them before I became 15, where I could actually get a driver's license. So I had to acquire another one. My mom scolded me on one of my car deals when I was age 15. The guy asked for a price, and I offered him another number, which was lower. And his feedback was, well, I've got somebody coming this afternoon that's going to pay me that number. And I said, well, you should sell it to him. It was a Mercury Montclair two-door, 390 horsepower engine, automatic transmission. You know, it really had a sweet engine in it for that era. And guess what? I got that car the next day at my price there.
Ooh.
But mom said I was rude and shouldn't have told him that. Well, it was the truth. If he's got somebody that'll pay him that price, he should sell it to them. I'm like,
you were doing him a favor.
Why are you talking to me?
Yeah.
But either they backed out or he was not completely honest with me. It could be a maneuver to, well, you better pay me that price now because somebody else is going to buy it. Well, they didn't, and I got the car. So for newbies, that's a little bit of young history with me, my firm that I built and run. I'm CEO of Gregory Ricks and Associates, a Total Wealth Authority. We're money managers, financial advisors, Sherpas, financial coaches, you know, and the like. They're helping you reach your financial destination. And doing this show was another platform to help people that James and I have been working together on for 11 and a half years now. And we're just, you know, continuing forward with helping you. If you want to join the conversation, it's 504-260-0995. Wes Blanchard will be joining us shortly, estate planning attorney. And I want to talk a little bit about an article. And I appreciate our last caller that called in before we went to break. And he was talking about gold and silver. And some of that can and probably already is already built into what we're doing as money managers with people's accounts. The investment philosophy we have is trademarked, and it's referred to as the Invest 50-50 philosophy. And I believe there's four asset classes that should be utilized. I like stocks. I like bonds. We prefer to do those through exchange traded funds, ETF, so we have a super low cost or expense ratio on those. And we like using the indices also to do that. If you can't beat them, join them. Rarely are they beaten there. But we also, with that, I like those indices, but we also like some money that follows momentum, and meaning we use algorithms that have been developed over decades for that money to move when it needs to move and move towards momentum. Because remember, everything cycles, and that's what I referred to as the tactical element. And there's probably some hedging in there as well to protect money from downside. But there's also this black swan effect where at a certain point, if the market's declining, say like last March, this money's going to exit the risk and then look for momentum going forward there. And I think that's really important. And then the fourth, so it's once again, stock ETFs, bond ETFs, tactical strategies. And then the fourth is using fixed index or index linked investments. And you may know that more of using fixed indexed annuities. In its way, it's a simple algorithm. We're using the upside of the mark, getting the upside of the indices, a percentage of that, and have no downside exposure. We're handing the risk off to insurance companies on that. Has a pretty darn decent track record as well. So what this really comes down to with the Invest 50-50 philosophy is the proper blending that we're looking for to make sure your money's working correctly for you in that case. So that's a little more insight into that call and how I answered that. And we think it's important. We're going through, because of inflation and how it's going to impact the Federal Reserve's decisions and easy money policies going away, market's probably not going to like that for a while, which means it's going to pull back. So that's why there's an emphasis on our part to make sure everybody, I feel, should have the area I referred to as tactical in the mix there for them. Wes Blanchard has joined us in studio. How are you doing, Wes?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Awesome to have you here. It's been a little while. And one of the things I wanted to talk about today, and I'm going to go over an article here, and I need to share this with everybody, but Wes Blanchard is an estate planning attorney, and we've worked together with our clients at Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority, on estate planning for quite a number of years. And I always kind of define, we have another trademark strategy called the guided planning system. We'll call it, maybe the financial GPS for short, or GPS for short, but it's the guided planning system where we focus areas are income planning, investment planning, healthcare planning, tax planning, and where Wes is involved with us is the estate planning part. At some point, you have to deal with what to do with your stuff. And we had a caller earlier that was asking, he was inheriting some stocks and they were going through succession. So he's getting, I believe, some 900 shares of Dominion. And there's more than one Dominion company. So I don't know that we got which company it was. We didn't get a stock ticker from him and it didn't matter. His whole point was, is that going to be a taxable event? And no, there's a step-up basis. He's direct heir of one of two heirs to that. And you and I have talked about this in the past, but over on my blog at gregoryricks.com, we have a news blog, and I do a lot of reading, but I don't put up everything that I read, but I do kind of select an article or articles, and my team puts up articles, at least one daily, that I thought was important for you to read, and it can help you with your financial decisions. And one of two dealing with estate planning was put up on the blog this week, more so about executors. And, you know, my thought there is, and we've talked about this in the past, do you really want to be an executor? See, when a loved one passes away, someone must take the job of winding up the financial aspects of the estate. That person may be identified in the decedent's will as the executor of the decedent's estate. If a family trust holds the decedent's assets, a trust document will designate a trustee. If there's no will or trust, the probate court will appoint an administrator. If any of these scenarios it might be important to listen to this hour of the show. The executor's assignment is financial in nature, to identify the estate's assets, pay off the debts, and distribute the remainder of the rightful heirs and to the rightful heirs and beneficiaries. The executor is also responsible for filing tax returns and paying liabilities there. And another problem they have to deal with is the beneficiaries of the estate that might not understand the process or with the reality, for example, of values, or, hey, I just want my cash now. Well, it's nothing's in cash. It's all in real estate. So I want to talk about some hour, but I think it's a big, but it's a very important job. And I don't know that everybody's built for doing that. What's your thoughts?
I think you're hitting right on the nail on the head, particularly that last thought where you noted it's a job. When you were going through all of those tasks, those obligations, the interactions that need to happen, that's what it sounded like. It's a job. And your employees are likely your family members. So that doesn't fit everybody's profile. So you need to think about who that person's going to be when you're drafting your plan.
One reason they might need a professional executor versus a family member or somebody that's not dealt with this, because I'm telling you, they're probably going to have to go do some research and reading up on what to do. So a professional executor might be advisable if warring or just plain unreasonable heirs are involved. This is not unusual in families of means. For instance, one heir who has basically been living off the grid, it's been my term today, I've been using it, somebody living off the grid.
Some mountain man.
Up in the Northwest for the last decade or so might think that the family homestead will be put on the market is worth $10 million. And the other heirs who's much closer to what's going on, though it's not worth a penny, over $5 million. Off-the-grid guy thinks he's getting shortchanged and is threatening to sue everybody and anybody connected with them. Or a financially challenged heir may be demanding his or her share of, I just need my cash now. I don't see what the problem is. Financial executor can squash such nonsense without getting you dragged into the weeds, we'll say, but that probably means court. a good estate planning attorney can recommend a good professional executor. So if you hire one or not, you may feel morally obligated to handle many things yourself. So I think that might be where that could be a team where they don't do everything. And I don't know, would a professional executor want to do everything?
Typically, you know, they do take on the majority of the work, if not all of it. And part of that is because they have to justify their fee, which is something that's worth considering as well.
Well,
right?
It won't be low, and that might be the problem why somebody's like, we don't, and meaning the Bennies, we don't want to pay for that.
Right, right. But, you know, mom or dad already understood that, hey, we're going to foot the bill for it in essence because it's still our money at the end of the day, right? And we're doing it for your best interest. We think you guys can't get along. You're going to squabble. You're going to fight. And then you're ultimately going to squander more of the money that we're leaving to you. So we're going to plug this professional in at a premium price to make sure that the damage is mitigated, limited to as much or as little as possible.
But they may not. So this might be a situation. Okay, you're saying somebody with means is probably already lined those things up that, say, has property worth $5 million or so or state of means. And, you know, we know that's not the norm.
That's correct.
Successions. And successions are probably, for the most part, less than a few hundred thousand. I might just guess to say out there. So in a situation where people are having to deal with this, and it's not a big estate, but there's some real estate, cars, gold bars, IRAs, non-qualified money, and value of $300,000-$400,000, they, and this person wasn't named, but they could elect to hire some help to help through that. And my guess is we're calling it a professional executor, but it's probably an attorney, huh?
Usually it is. And that's typically, you know, who we refer out to is another attorney who's got experience. And the reason for that is very, very logical. You have to know the ins and outs of the estate. When you've got heirs coming to you demanding X, Y, and Z, you have to be able to tell them, look, the law doesn't provide for that. Your rights are limited to these three things. And what you're asking for falls out of that, those categories. So, you know, you really do have to have a deep understanding. I'm sure there's some corporate executives out there who do a good job with this kind of thing and probably have seen enough of it through life experience that they could do a good job. But I think the biggest target is usually a pool of attorneys.
Now, if they've done, okay, in a lot of cases, they just don't have anything set up. Maybe, you know, we don't need a will. Might be one of the problem areas you see that people have to sort through and deal with because they just said, well, they'll figure it out, or they just didn't get, you know, that round to it, get around to it, and say, I got plenty of time, and something happened, and they died. So if they had set up a will would have helped. Also, those trusts. And more common is what? The revocable trust in that case.
Exactly. Yeah, the revocable trust gives you the option to basically sidestep the probate, the succession process.
And that makes it easier.
Absolutely, because when you set up that trust, you have the objective of selecting someone. They're going to be called, in this case, we're talking about an executor, but when you talk about a trust, you're looking at a successor trustee, and the trustee basically has the exact same job as an executor would have. Distribute the estate, do it in line with what's left in the trust agreement, and make sure that everybody gets what they're provided for and, you know, does so efficiently.
So if somebody set up a revocable trust and they may not have anybody debt, does that come with designated who the executor is going to be?
Yeah, we usually run right through a designation, and typically when we're doing this for couples, you know, the first option is going to be yourself, your husband, your wife, and then the survivor.
Yeah, the survivor typically.
Exactly. Yeah. But what we're planning for in essence is, okay, when there's no more survivor, who do we want? Are we naming one person, two people? Are we going with a professional trustee? You know, what are our options and why are we looking to explore the various options? You know, you may have a child that you understand is very level-headed, very financially savvy, understands the ins and outs of what is left to the kids in the trust, and that it needs to be preserved. And you may feel great about that person and, you know, the discussion's over. oftentimes, though, you got two kids that are on polar opposites of the spectrum, and you know, look, I can't appoint one of them, and I can't appoint both of them, because in either situation, they're gonna fight, right? So you need that middleman. You need to you need to appoint, you know, another family member or a professional.
Well, let's take that a step further. You're talking about the kids not being on the same page, and if they grew up together, they're probably not too much different in age. They've been used to all their lives having to work things out. Who got the Play-Doh, or, you know, no, I get the tricycle. You know, they've worked through things as kids and grew up knowing how to deal with. I'll take this in that step is what's in the mix is the spouses of those kids will have influence.
Absolutely.
And maybe think, you know, you don't realize it, but she's getting over or he's getting over on you. I think you need to check, you know, I can see this, and that's talked about. And I know I've dealt with people that have said, you know, everything's good till that wife of his came into the mix and has been problem set. Even the ones leaving it behind I've heard those conversations come up. You've probably heard that too. Another reason to have some paperwork. And I think a revocable trust does not lock you down. Those things are easy to change, right?
Yeah.
You could change the executor. You could change how it's given out.
Yeah, it's very pliable. And you can go in and make those adjustments. When we write them, you know, we do a flat fee for life. So you come in, you set it up with us. And when you want to make those adjustments, you don't get nickeled and dimed along the way.
Two questions real quick before we go to break. And then we'll get back on this some more and other topics. Does it keep you out of the public view? Revocable trust.
It does.
Because it doesn't have to go through the court.
Yep.
It's already a plan laid in place. And, well, I think that's pretty much what I was looking for from that standpoint there. And once again, you can change. And the other important thing is you can change things in it. Oh, the other, are you done? You don't need to fool with it again? You do the revocable trust? Well, we're good from now on.
No, you need to keep an eye on it just the same way you would with a will, right? I mean, you can't just put it in a drawer or a safe and, hey, look, it'll work. But, you know, you want it to be as effective as possible.
Yeah, I bet you come across those where they did something 20 years ago.
We do.
But I got a number here for you. The total household net worth in America is up 47% in the last 4 years and is up 89% in the last 8 years. The total U.S. household net worth was $74.8 trillion in June of 2013. It was $96.2 trillion as of June of 17. And June of this year, $141.7 trillion. And we're wondering why people are leaving the workforce. The demographics have changed. People are wealthier. They're like, I don't need to do this anymore, I think, has to some to do with it. And real estate going up. If their net worth's going up, they can afford to pay more for real estate. And I don't think real estate's a bubble either. Some of those are like, okay, fine with inflation. I've had people ask, well, what do you do about inflation? You have to have your money to work. At some point, we're not going to be able to outpace inflation. But I tell you what, when you're growing values of estates like that, what have you done the past decade? You've outpaced inflation because inflation was low. Now inflation's going to do some catching up on us. And I just thought that was very helpful there. And these folks with this increased wealth might need a revocable trust as a part of their estate planning program to make this simpler. Because you do a will, Wes. And hey, Trey, hold on just a moment. We're going to get to you. If you do a will, does that take care of everything? You don't have to go through the courts or anything?
No, that's the whole idea. If you do a will, you necessarily have to go to court, right? And that can be a process in and of itself. That can take a long time. It can be open and closed. I mean, quickly, you know, it really is just sort of a roll of the dice sometimes, honestly. And oftentimes, you look at your spouse and you just say, look, whether it's quick and easy or whether it's arduous, I'm just going to take it off the table. And that's the decision you make. And look, you know, it's not so, there's different ways to skin a cat is really the way it boils down to. The trust is going to be a lot easier for you to do it. Okay. The will necessarily is going to be a little more difficult. It's going to take a little longer. And sometimes people don't want to put up with that. They just don't. And so they pay the premium.
So a revocable trust doesn't just immediately go through the courts. That's done outside. See if I'm wrong. I kind of look at a will, which is heck of a lot better than nothing. It is. I look at it as a will as a guide of your wishes to the court. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly.
And the court's got to decide on if your wishes should be followed or not. But usually they do.
Yeah.
And a revocable trust is a plan that doesn't need the court approval.
That's right.
Okay.
Another way to perceive it is really kind of doing your succession up front.
Yeah.
That's one way to look at it.
Let's talk to Trey.
Trey in New Orleans. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Trey?
Hey, guys. I appreciate the information you've already provided. Talking about the revocable trust, but basically the scenario is that my sister and I are the only heirs. Mom is up in age, still right mind. A little bit of real estate in the state. I'd say the state total value is probably about $500,000, mostly of some investments in cash. But the biggest thing that mom's wishes are is her deal is, hey, at some point, if I get to the point where y'all have to put me in a nursing home, I don't want them getting my money. We know that there's a 5-year look back upon funds and everything. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to handle this?
Let me ask you this. Okay, you said don't want them getting my money. Who are you referring to?
Mom.
Okay. Are you worried about her money being protected, or are you worried about it being protected?
Her deal is this. We've had family members that have had to go into a nursing home. Okay. Or she has had family members. Her mother and father both were there. Okay. She realizes that and understands that basically if you are a private pay resident in a nursing facility, you're not getting any better care than if you're a Medicare, Medicaid resident there. Okay. She also understands that, if she's got funds and everything, that the first thing they're going to do is they're going to have a 5-year look back upon that, and they're going to, reach back and drain all her funds until she has nothing. And basically, she said, and it happened to them and their family, her deal is basically, look, I'm not going to get any better care if I'm paying the $10,000 a month bill versus being government subsidized. And I would rather y'all have the money than y'all being my sister and I versus paying it out to a nursing home.
Okay. I'm going to give you some thoughts, Trey, and I'm going to let Wes answer for some of that as well. But yeah, there is a look back, but they're not taking your money. If you have a hedge, it's called... Let me finish because I've got some thoughts here. I've only done this for more than 30 years and dealt with this. And sure. If you have a hedge, it's called long-term care insurance. Medicare does not pay for extended health care beyond a certain point, convalescent care like that, and those on the back end of life winding down. That's not covered. So somebody has to pay for that facility. Unless you have insurance that covers it, then it'll pay that portion of the bills. And I look at it, that's what her money's for. But also, it's not like all long-term facilities are built the same and cared for the same. The ones that Medicaid and such are paying for, that the government's subsidizing, because those people do not have any money. They show up poor. What? $2,000 is all they can have.
Yep.
And that facility is designed to take care of that level of cost and what the government's going to pay. If you've got means and can afford to, you don't have to stay. You can choose to because stay in that type facility because it's going to cost less, but you can also stay in facilities that cost much more and have much better care. They won't smell like urine when you walk into the building. is an example. There's different quality. And yes, it costs more. And it depends. And that's where I define this as an advisor helping people build plans and have money. And I always talk to them about you need to, I think of it, and I think the people I work with, Trey, look at it from a standpoint of going out in the lifestyle you're accustomed to. And I think money should be prepared to be spent on the back end. And I kind of term it like this. You might need to burn through a couple $100,000 on your end of life. Why? Because you want to be taken care of. You don't want to be a burden to the family and kids. And the kids inheriting the money need to understand this. And this thing is you're not going to inherit it all because it's going to cost to take care of them. Somebody's going to have to do it. Wes.
Yeah, I think the point that you're getting at, Gregory, is, you know, these ideas of the nursing home coming back and grabbing your money, right? That happens when you're paying the bill through Medicaid. That's what happens. Yeah,
that look back means you moved assets. That's right. Off the grid, so to speak, or out of their name, and they're going to look back when somebody's got to pay the bills. They're going to look for who moved grandma's money.
Yeah,
that money needs to be back in her account because the state's not paying for it if she did have means that have since disappeared.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's an issue that really it gets conflated all the time, right? Every so often we hear about this. And, you know, the concern is, I think, a genuine one, right? But I think the first thing to understand is what Gregory was getting at in the first place. If you pay the bill, you're not going to have any issue with the look back or them going back and grabbing money or anything like that. If the objective is to shift assets out and qualify for Medicaid when you otherwise would not have been able to, okay, now you're kind of opening Pandora's box here, and they're going to want to make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And they do that, and they make it difficult on purpose. They do that on purpose because they don't want folks who would otherwise not qualify basically kind of gaming the system a bit, right? And that's, in essence, what an irrevocable trust is trying to do when it qualifies you for Medicaid.
And I hear this all the time. He hears it, I hear it, and it's just, oh, I don't want the government to take grandma's money, or I don't want the government to take my money. And I was clear. Medicare pays for so much. Then you got to go on Medicaid, but you're poor if you're on Medicaid, honestly. And the government's not going to let you move and hide assets without looking back. And that's called the look back. Did you move assets away from yourself in order to show up poor and have the government pay for your long-term care facility? And a lot of us are going to need some type of extended care and help in our old age. We're going to live longer and we're going to need help. So we're going to have healthcare problems, wind down slower, and need help. And it costs money. If you want to be in a nicer facility, it's going to cost more. But nobody's taking money. It's just you have to pay the bills unless you show up poor. When has that changed any other time? And that's what nobody's taking the money is if you they're not having to go hunt for the money. You're going to pay the bill as you go. I go back to my mom, and one of the things is she wanted to die at home. And I've got two sisters. They were helping with her, but they couldn't be there all the time. And they had somebody come and check on her every day and such. I live a distance from them, so it's not something I or my wife could do on a routine basis. But we would go help out some. And I get a call, and Mom had some accidents and fell and stuff, but she's still living essentially at home alone. And you know, some of you know my backstory. My dad died a long time ago when I was young. Mom came into seven-figure settlement stuff, but she had since gone through that, which is kind of part of our core philosophies of preventing that from happening, me as a witness to life events that cause the money to come there and then in bad decisions for it going away. But now we reach to Mom's back end, and I get a call from Susan, and she said, we had to cut the lock. They had to essentially, because she was locked in, but she wouldn't answer the door. So essentially they had to break into the house to get there. And she was unconscious on the floor. And she just, a number of things, caused that, but they said they took her to the emergency room. They got her back up to speed, and everything's okay. But she was just wanting to update me on that. And then I didn't address it, but we spoke a few days later, and I said, we are going to have to do something. And I wasn't including them necessarily, but I said, you need to find some place that can take care of her like we want and let me know what it's going to take. Because I just told her, I said, Mom's not going to die like that on my watch. I'm her son. I'm not going to allow it. So we got together as a family and all shared, actually, and Mom was in a nice facility. It did cost, but it was a nice place. And we all shared on that. And yeah, we had to cut checks. And then the end stage, when she wound down, you know, when she's basically said, you know, she's only got a few weeks left, there was some other aid that reduced our costs there. But it's just a matter of what are you willing for family members to that. And that was kind of my take on that. But I get to, once again, there's nobody, the government wasn't going to pay. I can't go after them. Mom didn't have any money. She'd already spent it. And we had a little bit of reserve kind of earmarked for final expenses and some things like that. We sold her house. I didn't want a piece of that. One of my sisters got more of that because she was doing so much more, and I thought that was a fair way to go. But once again, the government wasn't taking anything from anybody in that case.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the hot point that you were referring to a little earlier, right? Is we really want to look at the end of life situation and analyze that a little bit better than a simple financial perspective, right? You want to go out on top. You want to go out in a way that you feel as comfortable as you are today. And I think that, you know, this is a bit of a personal opinion, but the idea that you kind of want a government-based medical assistance, right? One that's very likely going to be lower than the standard that you had been having for quite some time at the end seems a little bit odd to me. I would want to feel as comfortable as possible. But again, you know, look, that costs money, and that's the end of it, right? Certainly, you know, these irrevocable trusts that get pushed here or there, they can promise you that, look, we can qualify Mom, we can qualify Dad for Medicaid when that time comes. And his estate's going to be, you know, just as good as protected. Okay. That's if everything goes well.
So what can go wrong with that?
Well, a lot of things, right? And this is really just a high level overview of the irrevocable stuff. But when you set up a trust like that, Mom and Dad now, they have a very different financial arrangement with their money than they had previously. It may look like they're in control, but the truth is, in order to separate your money, yourself from your money, such that Medicaid's not looking for it anymore, you can only be an income beneficiary. You can't be a principal beneficiary. That's important because a principal beneficiary controls the heart of the matter, right? Now, Mom and Dad can only get the dividends. They can get the interest. They can get a few payouts here or there, right? So now they've really lost control of the money. And from there, you really need to make sure that you don't have any tripwire issues, right? Because there are things that disqualify you. If Mom takes control of that money all of a sudden one day, you know, she says, look, I'm going to go withdraw $5,000 from the bank account. And you say, whoa, that's well past what the interest payment is on that. She's blown the trust. Now the window restarts again. So that's one potential issue. But this is one that you and I discussed on the break. And we've seen this recently. Everyone who listens to the show has heard it at this point. Congress can undo this. They can bust your trust overnight. They did it for the IRA trusts. And this is a strategy that was going on for years and worked as good as gold. But overnight, Congress said, hey, we don't like that anymore, and we're done here. That option is eliminated. And people had spent a lot of time, a lot of money putting together that strategy. And who's to say that doesn't happen with the structure of the irrevocable trust that's put in place in the first place? So I think at the end of the day, you know, all cards on the table, the best option is going to just be to pay the bill. That's it. Take it on the chin. Mom or Dad should go out comfortably, not on a government subsidized basis. honestly.
Now, when they somebody with $500,000 that cannot show up poor because they have $500,000. Showing up poor means you have less than $2,000, essentially. There's a little bit more in the mix there, depending on husband and wife and stuff. So they but they can have a home and it's protected, but you have no money. So when they kind of talk about, well, they'll go get them stuff. No, they're going to put a lien on the home.
That's right.
And when the house sells after she dies, they're going to collect their part of that. They can. Whether or not they do depends, I guess, on the state.
Yeah.
But they can go collect and get back that money that was paid for the long-term care facility.
That's right. And it's really, from that perspective, no different than, you know, if you had a situation where, let's say, you own a company and so you supply some goods to someone and they stiff you on the bill and they stiff you on a $50,000 bill and they say, look, man, I'm just not going to pay it. I say, okay. So you go get a quick little judgment and they say, look, I'm still just not going to pay it. So what do? You go file it against their house and you say, hey, when you sell this house, I'm going to get my 50K plus interest, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, some people say, that's good. I'm never moving out of my house. Well, guess what? It's going to happen at some point. You will pass away and your kids will inherit that house. And that $50,000 lien is going to shock them. And it's not a whole lot different than what happens on the nursing home stuff. They're not going to interrupt your daily living, okay? But when it's time, they will make sure that they get paid. And they should be paid. They gave you services, right? Services were rendered.
Ultimately, we want success in retirement. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get there, a lot of financial tools. But you know how I ultimately define this? A confident, successful post-working. Is it retirement? Well, it's not working or having to be someplace because you need the money. You know, you might keep working. That's where people ask me, you know, in my travels around the country and doing the show and my clients that we have, you know, and colleagues ask me this question. There's one time ago, it's like, Greg, are you retiring? What does retirement look like for you? I was like, I'm not retiring. I keep doing what I do. And my company's doing well. Like, what would that be? Shut my company down or whatever? So retirement means I don't have, at some point it won't be, I don't have to go to work because of the team and all that I have in place, but I plan to be super involved for a long time. With that said, you know, at some point you've built money up is what I'm trying to get at. Not try to necessarily replicate me, but business owners that are listening, that's what you got to think about. Do you have a business? You know, can that business run while you're away for a few weeks or even just a few days might be the test? Can it run without you being there? Then you might not have a business. Think about that. Can your, and let's think about this to the workers out there. Because I'm a worker. I'm employed by my company. So workers out there, is if you step away from work, can your lifestyle continue? And that's what we're talking about when I talk about post-work. You can call that anything you want. And some may define that as retirement, but it doesn't mean that you have to quit doing stuff. And you might say, yeah, I'm post-retirement, meaning, yeah, you don't work? No, I go to work every day. I just don't have to. See, I like that thinking as well. And that's what we, in my day job and here at Winning at Life, my day job for the newbies, I'm CEO, founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates, a total wealth authority. I've got office in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Mandeville, Louisiana, Metairie, Louisiana, and Gulfport, Mississippi. And yeah, where I and where to do others. But one thing, that's not necessarily a necessity because we've got clients all over the country. Why? There's telephones, there's FedEx, and Zoom meetings. You know, technology's changed everything. So we help people across the country. But if you want to sit down, and I totally get that, I do have offices for you to get help at on this. And ultimately, what we're trying to do is help you achieve that goal. And that is to have financial success. And I always define retirement, and all I did was define it differently there. But I'm trying to define it as a way that you have money, which gives you choices in life that, yeah, I don't have to go to work. And at some point, you know, sometimes somebody, do I have enough money to retire? And it is a question, meaning there won't, what they're basically, when somebody says that, yeah, I want to leave work. I don't want to leave work. I love my work. I don't want to leave work. And, but when they ask that, it's probably, yeah, I'm tired. I'd like to leave work is what they're asking on retirement. And I really enjoy it when we circle back around and have that follow-up meeting that leads to strategy meetings is you're working only because you want to continue going to work. Here's why. And then we'll go through and show them that. And sometimes they continue working, and then sometimes they'll come back. There's two that just top of mind out there that both reached out to me months later and said, yeah, we need to sit down. I gave my notice. So, which I'm very, very excited for them. And some people are involved in careers and work. It's challenging, whether it's physical or mental or combination of the two. And with stress added that, yeah, it's kind of like good to take it away or be in a situation where you've got choice. Now you can go do something else that you really like and that is fun. So that's what we're wanting to do here for you on the show. We're over on Facebook Live if you want to watch the show this hour and reach out to us through Facebook. Once again, the Winning at Life app, download that. You can text, email, call the show. You can get that connect to the Ask Gregory podcast or replays through the app. Or if you've got a smartphone, go to your podcast and put in Ask Gregory or type in Gregory Ricks. It's going to pull up a whole bunch of resources for you. We have a YouTube channel over there as well. Did I miss something, James?
No, I mean, we got the podcast, we got the YouTube channel, we got a bunch of good stuff on Facebook. I just like the common reply when people call in the show and they say, Gregory, can I retire? And no matter what your assets are, oh, you can retire. You may not enjoy it as much as if you took some other steps, but anybody can retire at any time.
Yeah.
That's not the right question. The right question is, what does your lifestyle look like if you retired right now?
Yeah, and sometimes the discussion goes the other way is you're based on what they're wanting to do, because there's both parts. What do you have? But also, what are you wanting to do? What level of spend are you going to need? What's your expenses? And sometimes, you know, there's kind of three answers to that. What do you need? Well, there's this wish, there's the want, and then what's the need? The need is, what is your monthly outlay? What is it average the past 6 months or past 12 months? That kind of tells you what it costs. Is any of that going away? You know, it might be the mortgage. Yeah, I'm knocking last payments next month. Okay, that's a good drop. So then what's it after that? A lot of cases that mortgage is continuing. If anything, you know, when you think about it, your P&I might not be that much anymore. It's the insurance and taxes. That doesn't go away when you pay off your house either. So it's what those reoccurring expenses plus the lifestyle that you're wanting to continue. And sometimes, yeah, you're not quite there yet. If you're looking for tax efficiency in retirement, you know, I'm going to give you a download. You ready? I'm going to give you just a moment here, but it's regarding tax strategies. One of the things we focused on this at the beginning of the year. Well, we kind of, you know, the administration, we knew who was inbound by that time and knew that there was going to be talk about raising tax. It was actually campaigned on it. I honestly, if I was running for president, I wouldn't run on, yeah, I'm going to raise all your taxes. I just wouldn't have done that, but it worked for him. So he set me on a course of, we have to focus. We always talk about tax efficiency, and it's one of our core pillars in the guided planning system that we work with everybody on. But one of the things we implemented beginning of the year, we connected and with some specialists and created a report that we can run. So we basically, if we're bringing somebody on board as a client or having an annual strategy meeting, one of the things we want to see is the 1040. Why we want to annually. It's sitting like one time and you're done. No, we want to look every year, what tax efficiencies, what tax efficiency opportunities are there to take advantage of it? It's part of the discussion. Should you Roth? Should you not Roth? Do you have tax margin? Are you selling a business or something? Where can you get some efficiencies out of what you're doing looking forward? This isn't about, well, what did it look like last year? It's taking last year's information, what happened, and looking forward with it to find that. And I think that's really, really important. And in decisions on managing your money, such as margins, Roth conversions, should we be using tax-free strategies in the bond strategies to help you grow money? Are you running out of places to put your money? Well, then our max funding strategy is probably another area to create tax-free income. I just think it can even go to how are you distributing your income? You know, where are you taking income from? And this is and something I'm going to talk about next week is one of the mistakes people make is putting off RMDs. Well, RMDs are going to go up, meaning, yeah, it's a multiple based upon your age, and it's a divisor is the actual number, not a multiple, but a divisor, and it increases each year. It means your RMDs are going to go up over time, and especially even more if you're growing assets, which you should be. That would be our goal in working together. So then you're having to take more of that nasty taxed income each year on the back end of your life where you're probably having reduced need for income. So these are the things we talk about and strategize and start with this GregoryRicks.com strategies to get a download, then call the office and start a conversation. No matter where you are, you know, I've got offices in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Mandeville, Louisiana, Metairie, Louisiana is for the New Orleans metro area, and Gulfport, Mississippi. But we're available by phone, by video meeting, which you always hear referred to as Zoom meetings, and they're super safe with passwords and stuff like that. And we work with people all over the country. But if you want to sit down, I've got those four offices, but start a conversation and create some tax efficiency. And we're working on other things to enhance what I've just discussed with you to bring more opportunity out there. And no, we do not work in gray area. You know, we're not trying to cheat the government. We're going to pay him every dollar he's supposed to get. But if he has allowances, rules that allow us to pay less, let's make sure we're aware of those and we don't have to pay them, you know. So the office number is 504-832-9200. And that's where you don't have to be a client. You've got a Social Security question, Medicare question, tax question, IRA question, investment question, what to do question. You know, just if you have a financial situation and you're thinking about it, it could be estate planning. Call the office, ask a question. And that way you can get a conversation started. Nobody's going to force you to buy or become an actual client. That's something that would just, if we're working together, helping you on stuff and it evolves to that, that's fine. If it doesn't, that's fine as well. We want to help you reach your financial destination. You know, one of the philosophies in my team is if somebody's needing help, all they have to do is ask. The other team member should reply, "How can I help you?" That's how we look at the public. How can I help you today? How can I help improve your life, make you happy, make you successful? One of our concerns here that we've been talking about, I'm going to share an article with you that's over on the blog at GregoryRicks.com, news blog, upper right-hand corner. We put up articles every day from my reading that I do, and typically, yeah, I think this is very helpful to you, important. You should check it out. The second hour of the show this morning, we talked about estate planning. We had Wes Blanchard in, an estate planning attorney. You can catch it on the replay, as well as I think on the Ask Gregory podcast. Is he involved in some of those?
He's been in a couple episodes,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know as well for you. And so we were talking about estate planning and such. So there's a number of articles regarding executors regarding estate succession and so forth, I think is must read. Did I say that enough? I left out a must. So there's four of them. You should go to my website, look at the news blog, and read those articles, because you're going to have somebody, you know, pass, and somebody's got to deal with handling everything and get it done orderly. Another article that's up is regarding CNBC News reported on Jeremy Siegel warnings, and it kind of reinforces what I've been saying for a while now. But he's Wharton Finance Professor Jeremy Siegel, who's known for his positive market forecasts, is now sounding alarms. He said there's going to be pressure on the Fed to accelerate its taper process. He said, I do not believe the market is prepared for an accelerated taper. His cautious shift is clear departure. He was very bullish back on January 4th on Trading Nation. He correctly predicted the Dow would reach 35,000 this year, and it did. According to Siegel, the biggest threat facing Wall Street is Federal Reserve Chair Powell stepping away from easy money policies much sooner than expected due to surging inflation. You remember the conversation from Powell. What's that famous word he used on inflation? Temporary.
Oh, transitory.
Yeah, temporary, transitory. It's not going to stay. And I disagree with that, and so does Powell. He said, we know all, here's another quote, we all know that a lot of levity on the equity market is related to the liquidity the Fed has provided. If that's going to be taken away faster, it also means that interest rate hikes are going to occur sooner. I don't know that they will, because I believe there's an administration reason to hold off, because market's going to go down, take away lower people's 401ks, IRAs, and investments, and going to make them unhappy. I think that should happen before midterms, but we're going to see how the Fed reacts on this. Siegel is particularly concerned about the impact on growth stocks, particularly technology. He suggests tech-heavy NASDAQ, which is 5% away from its record high, is set up for sharp losses. He said there will be a challenge for long-duration stocks. The tilt will be towards value stocks. Yield is scarce, and you don't want to lock yourself into long-term government bonds. That's why we've cycled to shorter duration, because there's not as much impact on interest rates going up. So we have to worry about that. So stocks are going to drop, yields are going to go up, and it's going to affect long-term bonds out there. And people are turning to Bitcoin and ignoring gold, he thinks. He said, I remember inflation in the 70s. Everyone turned to gold. They turned to collectibles. They turned to precious metals. He said, in the digital world today, they're turning to Bitcoin. We saw Bitcoin break through 50,000 last week. I don't think that's the place to go, but I'm also had a caller earlier in the show asking about gold and silver. I said it would be already baked into our portfolio decisions. I wouldn't go out there and buy that stuff separately. Here's where I'm at on this. I think it's important to have four asset classes. We're talking about helping you reach that financial destination, what your goal is, that reaching that confident, successful retirement. And retirement means you have choices to continue to working, not to work, to sell your business, to keep the business, but to reach those choices. And what you're wanting is that end result. A lot of ways to get there. I think we built a better way to get there, and that's using the Invest 50-50 philosophy. We use four major asset classes, stock ETFs, bond ETFs, which are now shorter duration. We like tactical, and a reason for tactical means money that's probably going to move when needed to move. Tactical also has a black swan trigger, that if the market drops too much, that money's going to move. For example, it would move out of stocks if it was correlated to that. But it also is going to follow momentum all the time, meaning it's going to where the best growth potential is. It's not buy and hold on that asset class. And another, I think, is really important to be in the mix is index linked investing, where you get the upside of you get a portion of the upside of the market and you have zero downside exposure. And what's really important about the Invest 50/50 is getting that blend right, which helps you on growth. But when you sit down and talk with us, or we show you, when you're taking income and you're allowing volatility to remain in your portfolio, to invest your portfolio with too much stock portion in there, it's going to be devastating throughout retirement. And when I say retirement, means when you're taking distributions from your portfolio, it's going to be devastating. And if you're thinking of stepping away from work and you're 60, 65, or 70, you're needing that money to run for you for 20 to 30 years. And I think it's really important to think about it that way. And I think, and I've been talking about that. Jeremy Siegel here basically reaffirms, and I'd say that's pretty strong words there, because it reaffirms what I've been telling you. And so you ought to take a look at our plan for combating what's headed our way, not far out. And the tapering is probably going to start at the end of this year and finish mid-year. So then when are interest rates going to hike? Are they going to hike before the midterms or after midterms? It's going to cause volatility. And how are you prepared to handle that? Call my office, 504-832-9200. No matter where you're listening to us from, call my office and get a conversation started.
All right. Thank you very much for hanging out with us today. We do this 6 days a week and catch all our shows on the Winning It Life app. In the meantime, if you have questions for a financial advisor, start your search with Gregory Ricks and Associates, 504-832-9200, or go to gregoryricks.com. I'm James Parker. We are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. Neither AE Wealth Management nor advisors providing investment advisory services through AE Wealth Management recommend or facilitate the buying or selling of cryptocurrencies. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.